This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hi everybody, I'm Sess Busby, editor of Flying Solo. Welcome to our weekly podcast where we step inside the minds and lives of soloists and small business owners. Joe Payne is an expert in human behavior. He's a psychologist and sociologist and has spent the past couple of decades helping businesses and individuals navigate uncertainty. When it comes to mindset, he's an absolute authority. And as the creator of the Emotional Fitness Formula, he has plenty of advice to help you ride the ups and downs of life. He joins us today to share some learnings from his new book, Courage to Be You. So, if you're looking for answers on how to reframe your feelings around uncertainty, then listen in as Joe has plenty of great advice to give. Hi, Joe. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Great to have you with us.
I really appreciate you having me on, Sis. Thank you.
Excellent. It's always good to speak with an expert, particularly with your subject matter. Given the uncertain times that we're in at the moment, everyone is probably feeling a little up and down about a lot of things. So I think it's perfect time for your book to be coming out, Courage to Be You. So can you give us a little bit of background around the book, what inspired you to write it and why it was the kind of perfect time for you to get Courage to Be You out there?
Yeah, well, the timing is a sheer fluke, I can tell you that. It was just a matter of having the book finished. I've been working in the space of emotional fitness, emotional well-being, running a training business now for the last, 18 years. But it's been the last 4 or 5 years where I've been taking particular interest in our, relationship with uncertainty and realizing, and I'm happy to be wrong about this, anytime, but I seem to feel that based on my experience and just different bits of research I've done over the years, that the psychological relationship with uncertainty would have to be the single most important relationship that exists in our landscape of our mind. Separating this, of course, from the relationships that we have with people. So I got together with a mentor of mine who is very good at helping people like me categorize my ideas into ways that can flow and make sense to the reader, and hence Courage to Be You was written. So the tagline to the book is that it's, your guide to mastering uncertainty. And the purpose of the book is to help people become emotionally fit, which doesn't mean that they find uncertainty easier, but what it does mean is that it helps them navigate the inevitable uncertainties of life with direction and clarity. And that's very different to someone who is utterly confused and overwhelmed and, frozen stiff effectively.
Mm. So what do you think makes someone easily able to embrace uncertainty and change, whereas, the person sitting next to them might be like, oh my gosh, I really can't cope? Is there particular triggers?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a very complex answer, but I'll do the best I can. With the emotion, the book itself talks about, the emotional fitness formula, which is my creation based on my experience, etc. And there are five core principle areas that if resourcefully met and engaged can make a massive difference in our ability to navigate, uncertainty. And uncertainty comes in many forms, of course: pressure, stress, shock, surprise, challenges, putting out fires, something coming to an end, something starting up, there's all these different flavors. And what makes a massive difference are five core principles, of which the first one is identity. So identity is essentially what you allow yourself to be defined by. And most people seem to define themselves by the roles that they play. So the role of boss, the role of business owner, the role of mother, father, et cetera. And especially when it comes to a business owner, if we're defining ourselves by the role of business owner and the results that we're getting, we're going to be very vulnerable to experiencing the ups and downs in the extreme. And in the framework, what I talk about is working at letting go of defining yourself by the roles that you play and replacing that with defining yourself by the character that you're becoming. And that's a massive shift in, it's a subtle shift, but also a significant shift in how it is that we then don't take the wins and losses so personally. We simply move on. As Brené Brown says, you know, like have deep wins and shallow losses. Well, the only way you can do that is to not have your identity immersed in it. Does that make sense, Sess?
Yeah, definitely. It reminds me of those early days of the pandemic when so many people were getting made redundant or, you know, turning up to work and finding out they had no job anymore and then being totally devastated, not just because of the economic impact, but because of that emotional identification with that they were their job. They are their work. Like, so yeah, definitely. It makes sense to me what you're saying, definitely.
Because identity is something. So whenever we get triggered or we're reacting to something, it's because our identity has been, we see it as being attacked. Or in other words, another point I want to make about identity, which I think is really important, is that it is absolutely the single most powerful force in the human condition, because we will do anything to remain not only consistent with it, but whatever we define ourselves by effectively owns us energetically and emotionally. So we don't want to be owned by our roles. You know, it just doesn't seem to work in a very sustainable fashion.
Yeah, for sure. So you mentioned five core principles. So you've talked about one. What are the other four principles of emotional fitness then?
The second one is what I call life stages. And life stages is essentially the journey from ambition to meaning. We're all on unique journeys, but, you know, on a macro sort of thematic kind of journey, we're all on the same journey. And the journey from ambition to meaning is where the ambition-driven world is very egocentric, whereas the meaning-driven world is very heart-centric. And at some point, most of us, if not all of us, make the transition from ambition to meaning and then eventually integrate ambition into meaning. So this is all a very fancy way of saying at some point we will get lost somewhere, whether it's lost in our careers, lost in our relationships, lost in life itself. There's a point in time where we begin to question what used to matter to us and doesn't seem to matter anymore. You know, many people experience this in the form of a midlife crisis or some other kind of crisis point. And understanding and being aware of how this journey from ambition to meaning seems to work, it gives us some form of clarity of where we're heading. And if we didn't know that this conversation of ambition to meaning even existed, it would really make navigating uncertainty more difficult, because we'd start questioning, you know, why is it that I'm feeling like this? I mean, I remember many, many years ago having it was a year where I was confused because the things that used to excite me about my work stopped exciting me. And I didn't know what was going on. And I was actually going through that journey from ambition to meaning, where your priorities change, your perspective expands, your just what matters, the definition of what matters evolves and changes, our values change. So it's a significant transformational time for people when they're moving from ambition to meaning. And I believe that, well, based on my experience of running hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of Zoom trainings during the pandemic, there were so many people going through that that journey from ambition to meaning. And there's it's like a psychological revolving door that separates the two worlds. And the ultimate aim is to integrate ambition into meaning. And another way of saying it is finding a meaningful way to make money rather than making money for ends meet. We make money because we've discovered a meaningful way of doing it. In other words, we've found an avenue of creating an income source that is genuinely aligned to the values that we now have, not the values that we used to have.
Mm. Do you think the pandemic was also a great catalyst for that as well? It seemed to me there were so many people, you know, looking for work with purpose following that.
Yeah, completely, completely, Sess, absolutely. It was an absolute accelerant of that awareness. I'm not sure about your experience of the pandemic, but we were in were in Melbourne at the time. So as Melbourne proudly stands as the, what is it, the longest shut down
longest
city?
Lockdown city.
Yeah. Are you in Melbourne yourself?
No, I'm Sydney. I escaped.
You escaped.
Quite a bit of the lockdown.
Yes.
And also because I was a journalist, even in that first one, we were considered essential workers. So
right, yes.
I was not locked down when everyone else was locked
yes,
down.
Yes, so. Right. Well, during those long stints, I was running workshops for companies and groups on a literally a daily basis, Monday to Friday. And it absolutely created questions in people's minds that previously didn't exist. And I think it also clarified for a lot of people, not all people, but for a lot of people, you know, a reevaluation of what matters. And, you know, and a lot of people, yes, it did. It accelerated their journey from ambition to meaning, for sure. Absolutely.
Mm. And so I think probably a lot of small business owners and entrepreneurs actually walk that pretty well, because they often start their business from some kind of sense of purpose, or, you know, wanting to answer some question that they've come up or solve a problem. But for those who haven't gone into business that way, you know, they're simply running a simple store, or they might be in professional services or something like that, how would they then maintain that sense of purpose and translate their ambition into meaning?
Yeah, well, the answer to that is actually in the next three principles.
All right. So speak on. So.
Yeah, that's okay. It's all good. It's all good. We'll go with the principles. And if I haven't answered that question, please, Seth, remind me and I'll answer it differently. But the third principle or focus point of the emotional fitness formula is values. So there's been a lot of work done on values, you know, in the psychology space over the, you know, many, many, many decades. Personally, I define a value in this work as an emotional compass. And this emotional compass completely influences all of our decision-making, action-taking, and also the opposite, non-decision-making, non-action-taking. The emotional compass is something that comes from our hearts, that guides us in the general direction of what we either need to become, or what we need to stop doing, what we need to stop tolerating, or what we need to embrace, or what we need to let go of. And quite often, say, just going back to the example you just gave a moment ago, if it was someone who started a business just using your terminology, like a simple store sort of business, and wasn't necessarily completely purpose-driven, this would certainly reawaken in this person, or reconnect them, if you like, with some kind of meaning. And there's sort of two roads that person can then take. They can then either choose to look at what they do in a completely different fashion, or they completely change what they do to align to whatever they define as a meaningful existence. And to extend on this even more, we'll tap into the fourth and fifth core principle, and then perhaps there's other things we can sort of, you know, glean from this, if that's the right, Seth.
Yeah, for sure.
So then you've got the fourth core principle, which is emotional flexibility. And something that is really important to note here is that emotions don't respond to facts. Emotions respond to our interpretation of the facts. In other words, our emotions respond to the meaning that we're giving that particular experience. Our emotions respond to the meaning that we're giving to that life situation. So going back to the store person, for example, you know, how they feel about their business is not just, oh, that's just how I feel. It's based on the meaning that they're giving what they are experiencing in the current life situation that they find themselves in. And we are literally meaning makers in a world that has no meaning, and that's not to come across all doomy and gloomy, because it's not what the intention is. But the fact is that all of us can walk into the same physical environment and generate different meanings of experience. And this is really, really important, because meaning generates emotion, and emotion flavors every nook and every cranny of our experience. To give you an example, next door to our old house when we were living in Melbourne was one of the largest, you know, church buildings in our area. Two defining moments in that building. One, I was in there once for my sister's wedding, and I was in there another time for my grandfather's funeral. Same building, almost the same people, same physical environment, but obviously a completely different emotional range and a completely different experience. So how someone, the meaning that people give their life, their current life situation will generate that emotion, and that emotion will also influence what they will do about it or not do about it. And then you've got the fifth and final core principle, which is perspective. And our perspective, of course, is our philosophy of living. It's our purview. It's our big picture helicopter view of our life. And it's really, really important. And what I share in my work is that it's really important to create a clean and healthy perspective, because we're going to need a clean and healthy perspective to lean on when times get tough. And times will always get tough. I mean, this uncertainty will always be around us. It's a fabric of life. It's part of how everything functions. It's a precursor to growth, and growth is a perpetual need of the human condition. That's a whole nother conversation. But perspective is really, really important. And just to give your listeners and also our conversation here a bit of a soundbite on how to build a clean and healthy perspective, it's about learning how to give yourself instant access to gratitude and appreciation, because it's through those doorways that we get to build a clean perspective. And I mean, I'm sure, Sess, you've been told in the past and at some point in life, if, you know, when you and I get caught up in the dramas of life, I'm sure we've both heard it, you know, someone saying something like, hey, just get things into perspective or up to perspective. And from there, we see it completely differently.
Mm. And so would that kind of be the bedrock for optimism in a way?
It's a good point. I haven't actually thought of it that way, but yeah, I dare say you're right.
Well, something for you to think about.
It is, Sess. I love it. I love it.
With that emotional flexibility then, does that also go hand in hand with resilience? And how can you then teach someone to be more resilient if they're really not just feeling it, they're feeling kind of beaten down?
Yes, there's a definite connection to resilience. Unfortunately, in the space of emotional fitness, emotional intelligence, emotional well-being, the word resilience has become so cliche. And of course, a cliche is a cliche because it's important and it's accurate and it's got a truth to it. And resilience is a reality of life. It's the importance of having resilience. I have found it in delivering workshops over the years that the word resilience almost just washes over the audience without much impact because it's been spoken of so much. But you are right. Emotional flexibility is about adapting, how fast you can adapt and accept, and that's a key word here, accept the situation that you are confronted by. And most people, I think that's accurate in what I'm going to say. Most people, based on my experience anyway, don't necessarily or aren't necessarily great at accepting immediately what's just happened or what's going to happen or the maze that they're about to walk through. Most people either try to go the other way or deny or suppress or avoid or go around or go above or ignore. But accepting a situation absolutely builds your resilience muscle. Becoming, you know, behaviorally and emotionally flexible and adaptable to situations absolutely builds your resilience muscle, 100%.
Mm. Could you kind of share some tips then to help people cultivate, I don't know, want to say a better sense of perspective,
yeah,
but
absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
I do.
You know, to be able to see situations for what they are and maybe not get caught up in that drama.
Yeah, absolutely. A key element or a core ingredient of having a healthy and clean perspective, because perspective is really important, because as I said, the only way we can see the situation that we're in or the drama that we're caught up in from a different angle is higher up from a perspective vantage point. So that's important. But to add to that, to look at perspective from a more long-term sustainable perspective, no pun intended, is that we need to have what a core ingredient of a great perspective is also having hope. And by hope, I'm not talking about, you know, hoping, wishing, waiting, and that things will change. I hope this gets better. That's not what I mean. What I mean is that there are two levels, two types of hope. There's macro hope and micro hope. And both of these simply mean having something in your timeline, having something that you are looking forward to, like genuinely looking forward to, heart and soul looking forward to. And hope exists, as I say, on these two levels of macro and micro. Now, by micro, I mean constructing your life or creating a life situation where on a weekly basis you've got many things to look forward to. And this is easier done than what people might think. And one of the ways of creating micro hope or having something to look forward to is by embracing in your life some kind of hobby that is meaningful to you, that is aligned to your natural strengths.
So, like your running group this morning.
Yeah, exactly. Spot on. So because different people have got different sort of things that they love. Some people are more physical, like myself. Some people are more creative, artistic, musical, philosophical, you know, intellectual. Whatever turns your spirit on is something, there's a hobby out there for it. And if you align it to your natural sort of intelligence, if you like, whatever that is, and if you align it to your values and it's therefore something meaningful and it's an activity that you can do with others, that's even better if you're part of a community of people who are like-minded in that particular area, like my running groups, and I've got many of these groups, and it's something you can do, you know, minimum three times a week, it gives you this energetic, values-driven, emotional, you know, fitness perspective, something to look forward to. And this is something that, you know, it's not, we have pizza night here every Thursday night with my sons and my wife here, Sess, and we love it. I look forward to it every week. We have pizza once a week. That's it. And it's Thursday night. And I love looking forward to that. And that's pretty good. There's connection and community in a different way. It's with my sons and with my wife. Having a hobby that sings to your soul, that swirls your soul genuinely, is one of the most sustainable, high-class ways of having something to look forward to. And you could be having a day from hell and you start to think, your mind goes forward to, oh, Tuesday morning I've got my, or, you know, or Thursday night I've got my music lesson, or, you know, Friday morning I've got my running group, or insert cool thing here that you've got to look forward to. And that really makes a massive difference to getting through that issue on that day. And I love that. And when you combine that, like having a meaningful hobby, with some basic rituals in terms of how you set up your morning, how you set up your mind every morning, you have those two frameworks together as a strategy. Now you're creating a momentum with structure into your week, and you're building on ramps to access certainty. Because there's a balance within all of us that's going on all the time. There's some kind of balance within you and me between certainty and uncertainty. When that scale unbalances, we feel it. So, for example, if there's too much uncertainty and very little certainty, we're going to feel overwhelmed and stressed. If it's the other way around, where there's heaps of certainty and not much uncertainty, we're going to feel bored and have a low level of energy. We've all got our own version of that balance of certainty and uncertainty. And the crucial point I want to make here, Sess, is that the more on-ramps we can build to access certainty, like as I've suggested here, is the more certainty we build into our week, guess what? The more uncertainty we can actually handle. And that's the essence of emotional fitness.
Mm. So do you have specific morning rituals?
Yeah, so in the morning, I always take care of my mind. So I take care of my mind by focusing on things that make me feel good. And I always have books that I'm reading, whether it's a business book, a spiritual book, an emotional intelligence book, a psychology book. It's something that I find important to me and inspires me. I spend the first 20 to 30 minutes reading something like that because it sets my mind in the right direction. What's really cool, Sess, my wife, whose name is Silvana, Silvana and I were about 4 or 5 years ago, we were away at a holiday at a place called Venus Bay in Victoria, which is a surf beach down the southern Victorian sort of coastline. That's the word I was looking for. and we were walking along this beach, Sess, and it was early morning. And Silv says to me, "I love the way the ocean just resets the sand and the whole area here that we're walking on. It just all the evidence of people being here yesterday, the sandcastles are gone, the footprints are gone, evidence of children playing is all gone. It's just reset like a new day." And in that moment, I had an epiphany. I said, "Oh, my God." And because I'm always having these epiphanies with her. And she's going, "Oh, here we go. This is another one of those coaching things." I said, "You know, yeah, it is, but you got to listen to this." This happens with our mind. Our mind gets reset. Consciousness gets reset every day, just like this beach here. And every morning when we wake up, we are literally blank, energetically neutral. We're back to square one in a good way. And we get to determine how we want to set up our day through our morning ritual, whether it's what we read, what we listen to, what we watch, what we talk about, whether we meditate, whatever the ritual is. And that makes a massive difference to the day that we're setting up versus, you know, hopping straight into watching something on mainstream media that stresses you out or going to put out fires via emails. Suddenly you're in a different shoreline to what I'm at, psychologically speaking. So I think you need to take care of that reset psychological shoreline every morning. And that's through just basic rituals like that. So you want to make sure that, you know, your environment is set up so it's easy to do. You've got your book there on the table in the morning, or you've got your meditation space ready to rock. You've got your, you know, whatever, insert cool thing here. Again, you've got something ready to go in the morning, so you're not, you know, the ego is not thinking, oh no, it's too hard to do this. Let's just hop onto our emails and see what's going on, you know. So
yeah, let's unpack that a little bit, because I'm sure there are people going, oh, you know, I'd love to do that. It's too hard. I don't have time. I'm so busy. Is it really just you need to make the time?
Yeah, I'm giggling internally right now I'm giggling externally. But because when people say they're busy, it's taking nothing away from the fact that people are busy. Sure, I'm not saying that people aren't busy. But I had a mentor many, many years ago say to me, you're busy, so are the ants. The question is, what are you busy doing? And it was such a great question, because it really woke me up to, well, what am I busy doing? You know, am I prioritizing, you know, the old Pareto principle? Am I busy with the 20% of things that have 80% impact, or am I busy dealing with the 80% of things that have very minimal impact on my life and results and all that kind of stuff? And I found that a lot of people, unfortunately, get caught up in busyness that is the 80% that only has 20% impact, you know, versus the 20% that has 80% impact. I'm assuming that your listeners will be familiar with the Pareto principle, the old 80-20 rule?
Yeah. I'm sure they would be. But how then do you make that shift? How do you stop the busyness, stop focusing on the stuff that's not actually really going to get you anywhere?
You do it by setting a low bar, which is very strange for a coach like me to say, but it's a low bar of entry. So in other words, you say to yourself, okay, this is the book I've chosen to focus on this week or tomorrow that I want to read, that I feel I'm looking forward to reading. It's sitting there. You're going to dedicate 15 minutes. That's all, just 15 minutes to read that book. It's the first thing I'm going to do in the morning when I wake up, get my coffee, if that's what you do, or whatever you have, a glass of water or whatever. And that's what I'm going to do. So 15 minutes is very sustainable. And really, that's just a decision. If someone says they can't find 15 minutes in the morning, I'm afraid excuses has got them by the proverbials, and they're really not in control of their life at all. So 15 minutes, that's a really easy, sustainable, low standard, low in a good way that we can embrace. And then from there, we can start extending that to 20 minutes or half an hour or whatever it is that we feel that we can do. Sometimes what people do, it says, is that they set their bars too high for change. And it's like, well, I'm going to do this, and this whole ritual is going to take an hour every morning, and this is what's going to happen, and these are the circumstances I need to be under to do this. And, of course, it doesn't happen because it's too hard. So if we just begin with small steps like 15 minutes or even 10 minutes, surely we can all find 10 minutes in our morning.
I'm sure we can. Let's get up 10 minutes earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're almost out of time. So,
oh my Lord.
I know, I can't believe it. That was very quick. What advice would you give to our listeners then, who still might be, even though they've heard all this great stuff just now, they're still struggling a bit with uncertainty and feeling overwhelmed? What's the first step they should take?
There are so many answers to that question. my Lord. I certainly think that I'll give you two answers if I can, Cess. The first one is to really prioritize being loyal to your values, to who you are. That makes a massive difference in how you think and your attitudes and what you see and what you don't see. And to extend on that, we all need to give ourselves the greatest gift that I believe we can give ourselves. And that gift is the gift of self-respect. Because someone who has given themselves or in the process of giving themselves the gift of self-respect creates boundaries. Boundaries of, this is my time, these 15 minutes or this day or whatever the context might be. I think that's really, really important. And as a basic first step, it's just reverting back to what we were just talking about a few minutes ago. 10 minutes of activity that is purely for you, or 15 minutes, you know, whether you read a book or whether you go for a walk or whether you do nothing or whether you just sit and contemplate, whatever it is, just it's you time. And that's how you build that. And one of the many reasons why people don't find time for themselves is because of a lack of self-respect. And that's been my experience anyway over the last 18 years.
All right. Well, I'm setting a challenge for all our listeners to start the day tomorrow with some me time. So hopefully they do that and then their day gets better from there and they feel less uncertain.
Well, remember that shoreline resets every day, Seth, so it's a good thing.
I know, thanks to your wife for that.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you. It's been really a great pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you so much for having me, Seth.
My pleasure.